Bears ears, bears ears. Jim's not here to talk about bears ears, so I gotta get excited about it. Representative McKay on the right.
What song should the Mormon Tabernacle Choir sing at the Trump inaugural? Mayor Ben McAdams on the left of center.
Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Gerke debuts his first column asking Herbert to use political capital. I'm Natalie Gochner in the center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2017, and I'm joined in the studio by my colleague, Representative Dan McKay on the right.
Good morning, Natalie.
And the first time on our show, although we talk about him all the time, Mayor Ben McAdams, the mayor of Salt Lake County.
Great to be here for the first time. I'm a listener, and now I'm here in studio.
We love having you, and you know, it's nice to have the left represented by a centrist.
Yes.
Because you're more like me,
yeah,
maybe,
that's what
than,
I thought.
than Jim is, certainly.
Yeah.
Hopefully the aisle's really wide when you're talking about this, both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, very good. You know, I just because you're here, Ben and Dan, pipe in as you'd like, but I always like to think of Salt Lake County as the second largest government entity in the state, and that you, as mayor of Salt Lake County, represent, you know, well over a million people. I think sometimes people forget how big and important Salt Lake County is.
Yeah, Salt Lake County does a lot. Really, there are 17 cities in the Salt Lake Valley, and we are working in every one of those cities to do different things.
Yeah. Dan, you grew up in San Diego,
if I'm not mistaken. Yep.
So I grew up in Salt Lake County, and I was in unincorporated Salt Lake County, and now I live in Murray City, and I learned how nice it is to live in incorporated areas.
Yeah.
Ben is nodding just because city services are pretty nice in Murray.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's happened over the last few years is the services are pretty good, actually, in unincorporated county, and we've done a lot
I'm
to
sure
capture,
it's gotten better since when I was a kid.
It has really gotten better, and we treat a lot of these unincorporated areas as really, they are urbanized municipal areas. It's not the rural areas, and so we've done a lot to improve that, but we actually, the legislature, with my support, passed legislation a couple of years ago where we took all of these unincorporated areas and incorporated them. So as of, I guess, yesterday, there is no more unincorporated Salt Lake County, or the population of unincorporated Salt Lake County went from 160,000 to 5,000.
So this is so positive. So I live.
It's so funny, though, because I got more email about that subject, that session, when that bill was running through, than just about anything else. People on both sides who
just
were
really interested in it.
Equally worked up. Anyways, you're going to say
Because I lived on a little inlet of unincorporated Salt Lake County, I had Salt Lake City all the way around me. Everyone around me went to the city schools, but I was bused over to Olympus. But there was a time when a little street called White Avenue was paved halfway. So Salt Lake City came along and paved down their side, but did not pave all the way over. So that's my biggest story of frustration.
That still happened. When I was elected, that would still happen with snow plows and other things.
Not happening anymore, though?
It has to end, and it's come to an end.
Amen. Very good. Well, let's talk about the issues of the day. And just because it is the first of the year and we have inaugurations going on, all three of us attended Governor Herbert's inaugural. Give us quick reactions, Dan.
I thought the speech was really short, and I thought that was great.
Less
than 15 minutes. Now, in full confession, I have not – this is my second inauguration, so I'm not the inaugural fan that Natalie's been. Mm-hmm. Natalie, how many have you been to now?
I think 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And I said to Dan right before, I said, he needs to do this in under 20 minutes. It'll be a good speech if it's under 20, and he did it in under 15.
I was impressed because Natalie, obviously, is a historian somewhat of being around these things, and she says to me beforehand, if it's a good inaugural speech, it's less than 20, and she started outlining some of the key rules to have a good speech, and all of a sudden I was paying attention.
Yeah.
And it was a good speech.
Ben, what was your reaction?
Dan and I were texting before saying there's no way this is done by noon. You know, and lo and behold, it went short. I love the ceremony, and it was a beautiful ceremony, really coming together after elections. Elections are always about what divides us, but inaugurations and governing is about what brings us together. And so I thought it was a very inclusive speech. The ceremony was beautiful, but I love short ceremonies. Make it nice, make it memorable,
impactful.
Keep it short.
Well, so we got a preview of what's going to be happening in our nation's capital in just a few days with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in the rotunda singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic and the Sound of Music sighing to the mountain. Climb every mountain.
Climb every mountain. There you go.
Wow.
It was beautiful. No one resigned from the choir as a result of the Herbert inauguration, so that was good.
Ben, give us your take on this this woman that did resign from the choir and all of the media associated with that.
You know,
and even the fact that the choir's performing. Do you have a
perspective? I think my wife and I were active members of the LDS Church, and I think it was disappointing to see them accept the invitation. The campaign has been very divisive. Some of what President-elect Trump said and did and stands for is not reflective of Mormon value. So I was disappointed to see them accept the invitation to go. I get that you know, this is a presidential election and it's about coming together, but I just didn't think it was sent the right message for them to be there.
To the extent my daughter listens to this show, she'll become a Ben McAdams fan after that comment, but I'll bet you have a different opinion, Dan.
No, I'm going to solicit her fandom and say, Ben was one. No, I'll say, though, in contrast, I would contrast that with Mitt Romney's actions, right? Completely disagreed with where Trump went, completely mm-hmm. disagreed with him. In fact, came out with one of the most blistering speeches mm-hmm. I've heard from a former nominee, at least the yeah. 4 years before, about the current nominee. I'd never heard anything like that. And then to see when it's time to be considered for cabinet appointments that Mitt comes up and takes a statesman-like approach, I think if the choir agree with Trump or any of those other philosophies, you can look at the choir's behavior and say, we could all do the same, mm-hmm. right? It's our government. Yeah. He's our president. It's all these other things. And you may not like it. I mean, I was there for the Obama, administration coming into office. And mm-hmm. I remember that like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I remember some of the protests, some of those things that happened. But it was still my president.
Yeah.
And I could be disappointed in their actions, but the inauguration it's a national
thing. I just think there's a big difference between Mitt Romney. I think we were all cheering for Mitt Romney to take a position. Mm-hmm. I heard so many Democrats. In fact, I was at an event where Paul Begala was speaking mm-hmm. and talked about what an honorable man Mitt Romney is and how great it would be if we had him in leadership. Maybe mm-hmm. that's what sank him. But I was excited that Mitt Romney yeah. would put aside his differences to come and serve his country. And I was hoping for him to have a spot there because foreign affairs are so important and we need to succeed in that regard. But I think there's a difference between that and serving the president to make it good and celebrating the inauguration of somebody who won on a very divisive message.
So for me, Ben, I am no Trump fan, but I think it would have made a political statement to say no, and by accepting, they just supported our country. And yeah. so I make a real distinction there. So it's been, to go back to the inaugural here and hearing them sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic, I want our country to hear that.
Yeah.
I want them to see the Mormon tab doing that.
I did feel bad for the lady, though. I mean, at the end of the day, I think she's gotten some either good or bad press, and if you're not used to receiving that kind of press, I think it's been a little bit. I don't know her, so I can't say one way or the other. But I think it would be tough to be in those position and have that position be public and all these other things that she's dealing with. So I somewhat sympathize with the position she's in because I think she stepped into something she wasn't intending to. That being said, made it very public about this whole political issue, and the choir is usually not that way.
Mayor McAdams, just since you attended this Tom Friedman event at the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute this week, I obviously work there and everything, but give us your quick reaction. That was a big day. I mean, to have you and Mayor Beskupski and Governor Romney and Governor Leavitt and Governor Herbert and Speaker Hughes. Dan somehow just didn't come. Yeah. He was invited.
Hey, sorry.
They had a few token Democrats there. The Republican list was filled up.
But Mayor Beskupski was sitting right on the front row next to Governor Herbert.
Yeah.
I can't remember. And you were right behind him.
Right behind her, yeah.
But tell us your reaction.
Tom Friedman, of course, is an incredible speaker and really a great thinker, and I look forward to reading his new book. But it was just also for the state of Utah, for the Gardner Institute, really planting its flag where good decisions informed decisions that people are to be the center of gravity of our state's leaders, Republicans and Democrats, state, city, county, coming together to hear from one of our nation's great thinkers was really, I think, a great great planting the flag of the Gardner Institute of bringing in a keynote like that.
Dan, one of the most interesting things he said, if you want to be positive about the future, optimistic, stand on your head. And he basically said, look from the bottom up. So communities, cities, counties, states, federal governments up high, and, the nation, global geopolitics is the worst. Oh. Quick reaction to that, and then we'll go to break.
I thought he was talking about my feet looking better than my face.
Yeah,
so
no.
I'm actually glad to hear that he had some broader message for us.
It's good. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined in the studio by Representative Dan McKay and Mayor Ben McAdams. In our next session, we're going to talk about homeless shelters. Stay tuned. Thank you.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
And Ben McAdams, just left of center, not far as left as Jim.
Natalie Gochner in the political center and joined by two colleagues here in the studio on both sides of the aisles. Ben, let's turn to you on this homeless shelters issue. Some, you know, discussions going on, public input now occurring. It looks like there's some fragmentation occurring between the city council and the mayor. Give us just the quick synopsis of what you think's about to happen here.
You know, early on, Salt Lake County really is the largest funder, together with the state of Utah, of homeless services. So we were asked to come forward with a plan to reform homeless services, and we rolled out that plan in August. It's been pretty well received, and it's this plan that we should have smaller shelters, not a large one-size-fits-all shelter. We should focus on getting people out of homelessness, helping them manage a drug addiction and get employed and other things, rather than getting stuck in the system. And so that's been our recommendation. It's been pretty well received. We've done a lot of public hearings on that. And then the city's piece was to, since the emergency shelters are located in Salt Lake City, to come back and tell us where those facilities would be located. And so that's what you're seeing right now, is the city has made those recommendations. They made those in late December. There's some public pushback from that, as you might expect. That process is working out, and I think we need to respect both the city that's made some tough decisions and tough recommendations,
sure. Yeah.
And the public that's engaging now, and that is just part of the process. And so I think we look forward to see where that happens, and then what the ultimate outcome is, then we'll move forward. We're going to take the county's recommendations together with the city's site recommendations, take that to the legislature, and hope to receive the funding that we've talked about with the legislature to move forward with implementing our plans.
So props to you and props to Mayor Biskupski. I'm sure that Mayor Becker is just kind of watching this thinking, oh, I'm kind of enjoying life after elected office. Dan, are they going to be able to get some additional legislative funding? What's the mood up on Capitol Hill?
It is a tight year for finances, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to have versus what we would like to fund, there's always a delta between those two. I will say that Mayor McAdams has done a great job of trying to balance between the two and find opportunities, I think, for funding. So I hope that answers that question. I don't know.
Here's a place where they could get some money is not spend so much fighting bear's ears.
There you go.
So I'm in Mexico City over the holidays, and the bear's ears announcement happens, and I look at my phone, and I went, oh, good heavens, here it comes. And I thought of Jim, who's also in Mexico City over the holidays, and we kind of went back and forth. But you know, there's a lot of ways you could approach this. But one is to, you know, fight, and spend a lot of money, fight. And another is to go get what you can while you have leverage. And that was what Governor Leavitt did when I served in state government. He got the largest land trade since the Louisiana Purchase or something for our state and pulled all the state, you know, inholdings out of the area.
So that you have
there's some things we could do to make it lemonade instead of a lemon, Dan.
With no sugar.
Yeah, there would be no sugar. I agree.
I mean, the question really comes down to, and I think you're right. I mean, the problem is, how much do you let off of one side of it? Like, we're going to litigate, we're going to fight.
Yeah.
And let the other side feel like, oh, okay, we don't have to give as much, right?
Yeah.
So I remember, you know, as you looked at previous, you know, the Grand Staircase Escalante, same thing. You had the same feeling, the same stirred up fight.
Huge amount of property put aside.
Yeah, but the administration was able, at least I think the Leavitt administration was able, I think, work effectively with D.C., and try to bring something home. And so I still think that there's still room for that. It will be interesting to see if we're able to learn from our lessons of the past and apply them again.
Yeah, I think it's a loss all around. And I think we can all agree that there's some beautiful land down there in the Bears Ears that needs to be preserved and some of our Native American heritage. But to do it in a way that, you know, might makes right type approach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I recognize that there was no conversation around it. And which way you point the finger, I think you can point fingers in a lot of ways. But I want to contrast that, Natalie, to the Mountain Accord and how we've approached Mountain Accord, another area where there's a lot of contention, a lot of litigation about land use. And what we've done is we've come together, we brought everybody to the table, and over about a year and a half, 2 year period, we talked about how we would bring resolution, what land should be preserved, what land can be released to development, and what land should be preserved in our canyons. And what we came up with is a consensus signed on by Save Our Canyons and other environmental groups and our ski resorts and Ski Utah and other groups who've come together and said, this is the way to approach it. And then we got Congressman Chaffetz to introduce a land protection bill.
Yeah.
When was the last time a Republican congressman from Utah felt that it was safe
to
talk about land protection, conservation, and wilderness?
Yeah, that's,
and that's what's happened in Mountain
Accord. Good point. Hey, so I want to transition to Robert Gerke. So he was wildly acclaimed as the most credible political reporter in this town, wrote for the Salt Lake Tribune, under the new ownership, has been moved to a columnist status, writes his first column this week, and really challenges our governor to start using his political capital.
Did you like
the column, Dan?
The column, I thought, was very well written. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous for me to weigh in because usually when the governor exercises political capital, it's usually at the legislature's expense.
Okay.
Right?
You agree with the point, I guess.
I couldn't agree with him more.
He won by 40-something points?
Yeah. To have that kind of a win, and I'm not talking about, look, I appreciate Ben and his party. I'm just the November election really doesn't do it for me. It's the primary election I look at that says he did really well among the primary voters. Mm-hmm. So even among the 60%+ of Republican party members, he's got a wide mandate really to go
and
do something.
And then he has said he's not running again, so that frees him.
He should feel empowered. I think Gerke was right on that this is the time to charge forward and do something big. And we know that there are some big challenges.
What would you like to see him do?
Well, air quality. It's going to take leadership. We can't just nip around the edges and have anything happen there. Let's charge right in and do something about air quality. Our education, our education system, the quality of I worry about the future of our education system. I have four kids in our public schools, and I worry about that. Jump in with both feet. Do something big. Throw some elbows if he needs to. Do something big to leave a legacy for Utah.
I'm smiling at Dan because I don't think of Governor Herbert as a throw-an-elbow guy.
No.
And so if you just start thinking about how he would do this. So the way I think of political capital is you think of something you know needs to happen, let's say education funding, and then you create the coalition to make it happen, and you do some unpopular things. And when you do unpopular things, you lose political capital, but you accomplish something.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think an 80% approval rating is a call to action.
Call to action. Yeah.
Well, you saw the new committee assignments. I'm now the chair of education, right, from an appropriation standpoint. And so for me, that really will be interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, the speaker has mentioned that there will probably be some wrestling over a few issues. Let me give
an example. Why not put the sales tax back on food, give an earned income tax credit to people that needed that support, lower income, and take that new revenue and put pre-K, high-quality pre-K in every Title I school in the state?
You could see that kind of pressure for sure.
Yeah. What would the legislature do? The general rule is the legislature doesn't like it unless it's their idea.
He doesn't agree with me.
No,
I don't think that's my way of thinking. I think that is the case for generally of the legislature. If you take the attitude of the entire body, I think that was the case. But, as those who've been effective, I'll be honest. I've been on opposite sides of Ben in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm always complimentary. I need to stop that.
You're
a terrible mayor. You're with the wrong party. But there are ways to work with the legislature from an executive's perspective where you bring everybody along.
Yeah.
And you're always going to have your outliers who still don't like whatever you're doing, but you're able to bring, for the most part, everybody along.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun
couple
of years.
I have not seen that, though, from the governor's office. If you look at Medicaid expansion, look at issue after, the things that he really, really cares about, it's rarely a bring everybody along.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, he's in his bus by himself. And in my opinion, you need an orange bus with a lot of people painted on the side.
Uses the bus metaphor.
I'm just kidding.
Ben, we won't talk about your political future, but can you just tell us from an elected, from representing the second largest government in our state, how do you strategically use political capital?
Well, I do want to recognize that it's hard. Uh-huh. And it's not just a matter of saying a transaction that here's my credit card, I'm going to spend 10 percentage
points. Here's a policy wonk idea.
Yeah.
It's not enough to have good policy.
It's easier said than done, I would say. And having been now just completed my first term and ready to start my second term, I realize that there's only so much political capital, only so much time in the day that you can spend it on, that you really got to zone in on one or two issues that you're going to work on. And I look at my first term and we did some big ones with it, whether it's reshaping our townships and unincorporated areas or focusing on homelessness. And we're now talking with my staff right now is what are the – now there's a lot. There's 1,000 things going on every day that you've just got to work on. But in the midst of that, you can pick up one or two or three big, big things that you just double down on and use the weight of the mayor and the mayor's office to get something done. And we're looking at that. And I think it's the same – I'm kind of going through the same analysis now. I think I have spent political capital in my first term and I'm ready to spend it in the second term. But, this –
That makes me nervous also, but that's a whole other issue.
We'll bring everybody, we'll paint them on the side of the bus. And
lovely,
it'll be good.
It's interesting, in the inaugural of Governor Herbert, Inaugurals, you mentioned that I like these things, Dan. They're supposed to be personal expressions. They're not policy statements. The state of the state is a policy statement. Inaugural, you speak from your heart. You might even speak about your faith. I mean, it's a personal thing. But we didn't hear a lot in his inaugural address about some big ideas. It was mostly about the fabric of his character. So it remains to be seen. And we got the state of the state coming up in 2 weeks or something.
Now, as a Democrat, I maybe shouldn't be the one lauding Governor Herbert. One thing I liked about the inauguration is he recognized not only our pioneer heritage, but then talked about modern-day pioneers. He highlighted refugees and others.
Yeah.
That is something he's done well, as nice. I think he has been fairly inclusive.
Yeah. My favorite part of the inaugural was right at the beginning, because I just liked that he honored his wife, our First Lady, Janet Herbert, and then also Spencer Cox and his wife, because I know they're both lending incredible service.
Yeah, they are.
Both families. Yeah. Hey, let's jump to Mill Creek, just because it was a big week for them. First mayor and city council sworn in. Ben, you attended that.
I gave a welcome at their inauguration last night. It was great to see this new city. A big part of unincorporated Salt Lake County chose to be a city, and they swore in their council. So they had what a great council too. I don't know many of them personally, but Mayor Silvestrini seems like he's going to do a great job. They have a majority female city council, mm-hmm. which I don't know that that's very common in Utah. We mm-hmm. talk about women in leadership, and Mill Creek from the get-go is doing it right. They got some great leaders, and you know, from all around. I had the opportunity to speak there, and earlier in the day, as I was preparing to head to the inauguration, my wife asked me to stop and make a purchase. So I stopped in at the store and I was checking out. The clerk said, "You know, you look exactly like Ben McAdams." And I said, "Well, I am Ben McAdams." And so she was, you know, she gave me all this flattery.
I think he's used that line before. Well,
no,
I am.
But I blushed in that. And then she called over to the other clerk and she said, "Hey, guess who's here? It's the mayor of Mill Creek." And so, you know,
that's good. Governor Leavitt tells this story of being in rural Utah, and he goes into a little cafe and someone says, "Hey, you look just like Governor Leavitt." He says, "I know." And the guy says, "Don't it make you mad?" So I don't know if you ever
I'll have to try that next time, yeah.
Dan, do you ever get recognized in public places?
Every once in a while, you know, because my constituency is much smaller and there's even fewer people that see. I get recognized more frequently, candidly, from my voice on this show. Mm. You know, you sound really familiar, and I get the... Oh,
isn't that... I've had this as well. Yeah.
You're the other guy with Jim DeBacchus is usually how
it goes. Yeah. Well, start of 2017, I don't know how you both feel about that. I'm a big New Year's person. I love renewal. I love starting again. I don't like odd numbers, so I got that little problem going with 2017, but...
I don't like
I'll
odd numbers
that.
Either.
Yeah, I can't handle the odd number.
You're odd number, even number person. You don't care.
I don't know that I care. Yeah.
Okay. I'm an even number.
When I have my birthday in May, I turn an even number, and that will make me feel better.
So in redistricting, I thought about renumbering my district because it's, you know, somebody who's outgoing has an even number just because I don't like 41.
So Dan, what kind of hopes and goals?
You would start
what
with me.
Well, what do you have? What are you thinking about in 2017? What do you want to see to be, you know, something about a brighter future for our state or our country?
I'd like to find solutions to some of our longer-term problems, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, I think all of us would like to see some of those things. We've, you know, we've got incremental improvements mm-hmm. on little
like
things
here and
there.
You'd like to see some giant steps.
Yeah, big steps. Let's take some chances.
So you're a Republican. If we go to Washington, D.C., you're going to see some big ones. You're going to see a lower corporate income tax rate.
Yeah. You are, and you're going to see...
You're going to see...
Look, I would love, and I know, you know, we talked about the lands issues earlier, I would love to see a more thoughtful approach to the Antiquities Act. I know it sounds crazy, you know, but maybe that's
maybe narrowing
of
the authority a little bit.
But yeah, but that generally goes with the theme of what we've seen out of the executive branch in D.C. is we've seen, you know, basically a carte blanche approach to management, right? Mm-hmm. And the president has now become an active manager as opposed to in the past. That wasn't the case, and that wasn't the idea of the founders. Yeah. So I'd love to see that step back up.
Ben, as a Democrat, do you have some trepidation about what you've seen happen in Washington with
all
that Republican control?
Yeah, I'm worried about this and worried about the messages of the Trump campaign coming to fruition, and I think it's a little scary. But I you know, want him to succeed for the sake of our country, but not on some of the things he talked about that he wanted to get done.
Yeah. So Dan wants to see some, you know, big things happening. What are your hopes and dreams? And I'll preface that by just saying my husband, for whatever reason, told me this quote today about from sea to shining sea, and he was saying from wall to shining wall, you know, and what an awful metaphor that is.
Yeah, it really
is. That's the kind of scary part of 2017 for me.
Well, I think that in Utah we do things differently. One of the things that I'm looking forward to in 2017 is I think we have a great window to do something impactful for the homeless mm-hmm. and for public safety around
that's
the homeless
a huge step.
Services.
Yeah,
so we've got great leadership from our Speaker of the House, from Mayor Biskupski and the Salt Lake City Council, from the county. Everybody is all in on this, and I think 2017 is the year that we start having an impact.
Yeah. So I put in my notes here as I was thinking about hopes and goals for 2017. I hope Trump avoids a disaster. And the biggest thing on my mind is international geopolitics kind of things. Or secondly, has a quick exit.
You're just hoping that things aren't bad.
Yeah.
Come on. That's not some kind of a compliment. Yeah.
I'm hoping for some disasters. Just not the ones that are going to have a lasting impact.
Yeah.
But look at, okay, so I'll just say this. You have, and if everybody wants to be doom and gloom, you've got a pragmatic person as the president,
yeah.
right? And
a deal maker.
A deal maker, pragmatic person. So we can complain all we'd like about, you know, the dooms that could come, but I don't think it will be that bad.
Yeah. Last words on 2017. Anything?
No, I'm hoping that we see a much more productive 2017.
And Ben?
I think same thing. Coming together, the Utah way is to rise up together and solve our problems. I hope that happens.
That's great. Well, Happy New Year to all of you. I've been joined by Mayor Ben McAdams, Representative Dan McKay. I'm Natalie Gochner. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.